January 21st, 2013. This is Bengala Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the frigid suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit Spingola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to Spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. The Academy Awards is just one of nine types of Academy Awards. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences dispenses awards each year at a formal ceremony. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer studio executive Louis B. Mayer conceived the idea, and in 1921 they gave the first awards at a ceremony at the Hotel Roosevelt in Hollywood. More than 100 countries now televise the awards annually, giving unwarranted credibility for the sex and violence that Hollywood produces. Its equivalents include the Grammy Awards for Music, the Emmy Awards for Television, and the Tony Awards for Theater. The Swedish philanthropist-inventor Alfred Nobel established the Nobel Prizes in 1895. Committees at various academies, mostly in Scandinavia, award the annual prizes. Just 2 years later, in 1897, with the imminent Spanish-American War, the Second Boer War, and the Russo-Japanese War, a military power trust consisting of Vickers, DuPont, Nobel, Cohn, Cottweiler, and others began preparing for a major world war. In 1901, ironically and obviously hypocritically, they first awarded prizes in physics, chemistry, physiology or medicine, literature, and peace. They award the Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway, but award the other prizes in Stockholm, Sweden. People widely regard the Nobel Prize as the most prestigious award available in the fields of literature, medicine, physics, chemistry, peace, and economics. Yearly, the Nobel Foundations give each recipient a gold medal, a diploma, and a sum of money. A five-member panel appointed by the Norwegian Parliament determines the recipient of the Peace Prize. That panel awarded Barack Obama the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize, and on February 27, 2009, he talked about a drawdown from Iraq, promising to remove 142,000 troops and to end all combat operations by August 31, 2010. That didn't happen, now did it? Judicial Watch just placed Obama in their top 10 of the most corrupt politicians for 2012. My guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Welcome to the program, Carl.
Thank you, Deanna. Good to be back.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back. And you're going to be discussing the backpatting Nobel Prizes. And you recently wrote a three parts called Jews and the Nobel Prize, Fantasy versus Fact. And you also recently wrote Jews and the Kyoto Prize. But we'll be right back after a three-minute commercial, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Introducing Michael Anthony's Private Stock Herbal Formulas, Infection Killer for all infections, viral, bacterial, fungal, parasitic. My Rapid Heal for all injuries enables the body to mend super fast. My System Toner, the Rejuvenator, tune-up for the entire body, head to toe, keeping it youthful, the mind positive and focused. Dragon Juice, the Revitalizer. pure power in a delicious drink. If your body's dragging, you need Dragon Juice. Lung formula for asthma and all lung afflictions, arthritis fix, great tasting herbal teas and more. Michael Anthony's private stock exclusive herbal formulas. To find out more, call 845-231-1094 or email Michael Anthony's private stock at yahoo.com. Michael Anthony's private stock exclusive herbal formulas.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are: incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256 or go to zerodebtguaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
We've been helping people for over 18 years.
Call Zero Debt Guaranteed, 800-477-9256. Ask for free information, no obligation. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com now.
This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Radl, R-A-D-L, and he is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is Semitic Controversies, all one word, semiticcontroversies.blogspot.com. And, of course, I think a lot of people recognize that Einstein was a total fraud, and there's certainly a lot of evidence to indicate this. And you went to a lot of work doing these articles. I am just amazed at your scholarship. So take her away.
Well, first of all, the problem we're dealing with these lists is that they have a very, very long history. And most people aren't aware that this debate over are the Jews this creative powerhouse or are they a negative impact has been raging since at least the time of Josephus, because if you read Josephus's against Apion would be the English translation, you find precisely that. He cites Greek authors like Apollonius Molon, Poseidonus, Lysimachus of Alexandria, Chaeremon of Alexandria, all intellectual authorities in their day, attacking the Jews for precisely this, saying they haven't invented anything, they haven't done anything, why should we put up with these people? But then he cites people like Clearchus of Soli, Theophrastus of Elissos, and Megasinthenes, who he claims said that the Jews were wonderful people, and Idil is inventing, and you know, were wonderful, just generally nice people. This, as I pointed out elsewhere, is complete nonsense by Josephus, but it does actually indicate that from the very earliest times, the Jews have been using this idea of what Cecil Roth famously called the Jewish contribution to civilization as a kind of touchstone for a lot of different arguments for their very existence, often, as well as their chosen nature. And more recently, that's come through the debates between Christians and Jews, particularly evidenced in the debates between Johann Pfefferkorn, who was a Dominican convert from Judaism, and a Christian Hebraicist called Johann Reuslin, over whether the Jews were really this contributing factor, as usually claimed. These debates were then resuscitated heavily in the 19th and 18th centuries, when they found expression in the writings of people like Schiller, Heine, Goethe, Hegel, people like that, all contributed in some way to this debate. Some said that Hegel, for example, said that Judaism was a dead religion, it wasn't worth anything, these people were sterile, they didn't produce anything. Schiller disagreed, Heine, of course, being Jewish, disagreed. And there was this big debate then about this. And that has come through into the 20th century through writers like Glitz, who is one of the big founders of Jewish history, who wrote prolifically against Gentiles inventing anything, basically. And he was famously cruel towards the Jews, the Germans and the French, saying that they didn't invent anything at all. It was, and that all the inventions that they'd claimed were in fact made by Jews. And then you get this transliterated by modern scholars who have then informed Zionist discourse and modern Jewish discourse in this matter. You've got individuals like Cecil Roth, as I mentioned. You've got Gotthard Deutsch, another Jewish theologian from Germany. Simon Dubnow, a famous Russian Jewish historian who was shot in 1941 for being a subversive by the Germans. Salo Baron, the American Jewish historian, and Max Nordau, again, a German Jewish politician and writer. Most of these chaps are Zionists of some description, but they took this nationalist theme of the Jews contributing massively in disproportion to their numbers, and they kind of made it a kind of meme. And one of the things you find in Roth, and you see in Dubnow and Baron and Nordau, is it's beginning to use the Nobel Prize and any kind of academic prize to show that the Jews, shall we say, are massive contributors. Now, the interesting thing about this is because we have a quote from a Jewish Marxist, fairly senior, American Jewish Marxist from 1921, called Daniel de Leon, who is the premier Marxist theorist still about anti-Semitism. And he said, very, very simply, in relation to these claims, he said in his Anti-Semitism, Its Cause and Cure, 1921, pages 14 to 16, "Let loose upon the world a traveller from Mars, or any of the innocents that Voltaire used to choose in his criticisms of men and things. And what would be his experience? He would find that every time anyone with fact and argument shows a certain Jew is conceited or superficial, forthwith up jumps the Philistinite and denounces the utterer as an anti-Semite. Every time anyone with fact and argument shows that a certain Jew is a characterless worm, up jumps the Philistinite and denounces the utterer as an anti-Semite. Every time anyone with fact and argument shows a certain Jew to be double-faced and a swindler, up jumps the Philo-Semite and denounces the jutterer as an anti-Semite. Every time anyone with fact and argument shows a certain Jew to be physically or morally unclean or coward or forthwith up jumps the Philo-Semite and denounces the utterer as an anti-Semite. The latest is the most remarkable Kishinev Jews the Kishinev incident of this sort. The Russian ambassador at Washington said, having said that many of the Kishinev Jews, that's a reference to the Kishinev pogrom, Jews were usurers, forthwith up jumped a Jewish editor of a Jewish paper in the city, he means New York, Mr. Kazuyel Saracen, and declared that such words were an insult to the 10 million Jews of the world. What conclusion from such an experience could our traveller from Mars arrive at, other than that the Jews, in any quote he uses in quote, Semites, are all conceited, characterless worms, double-faced, swindlers, physically and morally unclean, cowards and usurers. Seeing that any one such justifiable charge brought against a concrete Jew is forthwith pronounced anti-Semitism, what conclusion could that traveller arrive at, but that Semitism was the incarnation of all these vices, a veritable compound of vileness, and that opinion, be it noted, would be gathered not from the anti, but from the philo-Semites." In saying that, he meant, very, very simply, he's referring to this kind of argument, when he's saying, the Jews are saying that they are eternally good. And that by saying this, they imply that anybody who can say to someone else that this particular instance, a Jew has been bad, a Jew has done something bad, is false, is wrong, is a lie, and they will automatically denounce them as any name they can think of, particularly a politically charged name, as anti-Semite was then, that still is now. And you can see this in how Jews behave today. they will not allow anyone to have any criticism of them, even to the point where they will even censor their own if they produce criticism, which goes, in quotes, beyond the pale. Great example was Ali El-Tawaf when you wrote a book about Jewish ritual murder, saying that it was possible to happen, and then all of a sudden he got attacked across the board by scholars, by Jewish scholars, philo-Semites, politicians who were Jewish, the lot. He ended up pulping with books.
And we can also apply the same thing to David Cole and Norman Finkelstein and several other people.
Well, Norman Finkelstein was a classic example of it, really, because Alan Dershowitz was caught red-handed sending threatening emails to his faculty seniors. I mean, what more blatant intervention do you need to say this person is out of control? And they are out of control.
Indeed, and they've been known to do this to anybody who makes any criticisms of them at all. They do everything that they can to get people fired from their jobs and other positions.
Yeah, and part of that is because what they want to do is they want to prevent what they call the legitimization of discourse. They don't want they don't want criticism of Jews to become legitimate, because once it becomes legitimate, as the Israel lobby criticism has done, it all of a sudden they have problems, because all of a sudden they've got an idea that they really hate and that they want to stop, but they can't stamp it out easily because it's become mainstream. It's become legitimized by the fact that they haven't been able to make people retract or make them lose their jobs or what have you. It just goes to show you can actually beat the Jews. You just need to be prepared for what comes your way. It's just very difficult.
Right. Well, this article is just amazing, and you've put together all of these winners, and of course we always see this listed as okay. See all of these Jews who have won the Nobel Prize, and then the same person, and I've received this email numerous times, and then they say, okay, can we name any Arabs who have received the Nobel Prize for anything?
Yes. There are six, actually, as I recall. One second, I will go and find my notes on this, because I wrote an article about this as well.
Right.
Specifically to do with Jews and the Muslims and the Jews and the Nobel Prize. Basically, the problem here is what they claim, is what they're doing, is they're saying, it's a general criticism of their list, is that the Jews, anyone can be Jewish, and it's something I'll come on to in a bit, anyone in their list can be Jewish, as long as they have some kind of claim that this person is Jewish. But with a Muslim list, they say, well, hang on a minute, we're going to use a very, very strict definition. We're going to say it has to be someone who is Islamic, has to come from an Arab country, and so forth. It's very, very difficult to combine those two lists because they're not actually comparing the same thing. One's comparing a biological group and saying this is a biological group in many different countries. Is saying all these different countries, this group has existed in dozens of countries. And then you've got this religious group that they're going to compare it against, which actually has only had access to the Nobel Prizes for the last 30 years. Because before then, it's not likely that you'd get a Nobel Prize if you were an Arab, because nobody in Europe would, certainly no one who was a scientist, would know how to read Arabic, for a start. How are you supposed to do that, for a start? I mean, if you're a scholar, you have a problem of what I call linguistic bias, because you have, you know only the languages you know, and if you're a scientist, you're not going to know many at all, are you?
Right. Alrighty, we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. We'll be back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors.
Right now, food is everywhere. If you want it, you can buy it. For now. When the coming crisis occurs, how will you feed your family? Will healthy nutrition be available? The answer is probably no. Jeff Lawton will show you how to survive the coming crisis in an abundant way with permaculture. Jeff Lawton is a permaculture designer, teacher, and consultant who has shown people like you, people in 35 countries around the world, people who want to know what they can do to survive the crisis that they see approaching. There is an absolutely free video online that will help you discover how to survive by giving you step-by-step instructions in establishing food forests that will help you become survival confident. Log on to jefflawton.org right now. This free video will only be available for a limited time. That's jefflawton.org. G-E-O-F-F-L-A-W-T-O-N.org. Survival is not optional. Visit jefflawton.org today.
What do you need? You need paracord. CampingSurvival.com is providing you U.S. military 550 paracord. 550 tensile strength. Military specifications. Made in the USA. Available in 3,000, 1,000, 600, 300, 150 links. You can purchase yours now at CampingSurvival.com. Lowest prices on paracord. Huge selection. All ready to be shipped. Black paracord, 1,000 feet, only $39.83 right now on CampingSurvival.com. But wait, use the code FREEDOM when purchasing and save 5% off. Paracord is a unique material used for many different reasons. Get yours from CampingSurvival.com now. Confidence born of preparation, CampingSurvival.com.
Extend your life with
Why do over 50% of North Americans suffer from some form of chronic ailment? Could it be due to a toxic overload? It's time to take back your life. Get the lead out as well as the cadmium, mercury, and calcium. Extendivite is a garlic cayenne supplement with five other herbs that acts like a natural Drano, cleaning out the stored toxins, restoring your energy and youthfulness that we've lost. If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, or fear, then Extendivite is for you. Available in either capsules or liquid, you too can see why Extendivite is the number one heart drop available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Carl Radl, that's R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And there are lots and lots of wonderful, wonderful articles at that website. Please do peruse them and just learn what Carl has to say. I mean, he's a top-notch scholar. So anyway, welcome back.
Yeah, we were talking about these lists. Now, as I said to you, the problem is that what the Jews are doing is very, very simple. They're using the maximum possible number of Jews they can think of, and they're using the minimum number of Arabs, because they're saying only Muslims. They're not saying Christian Lebanese, they're not saying what have you. They're deliberately confusing the issue in order to make the weightings go completely askance. And it's very easy to demonstrate that, because if you look at the lists that are online, if you look at them and you look and see what they list as who is Jewish, who's not Jewish, you find massive discrepancies, because they can't make their own minds up who's Jewish and who isn't. For example, the list at the Jewish Virtual Library of chemistry winners is only 27 people. JInfo, which is the Zionist website, lists 33. The Israel Science and Technology homepage claims there are 31. And AboutJudaism.com claims there are 23. So at what point can you say, when someone says send you a list, can you say these Jews are actually all Jews? You can't really. Precisely because they're not clear on the definitions at all. One, they'll often claim, of course, the definition of Jewishness is such a massive topic in itself. But it basically comes down to three things. Either you say it's religion, either you say it's culture, or either you say it's biology. You have those three choices. And what Jews tend to do is they tend to sort of skid between all three. So they prefer religion, they prefer religious confession and culture when they're doing an open definition. So, for example, the Jewish Virtual Library and JINFO both say, effectively, it's a religion, it's a religion and a culture. But both of them use a biological definition when it suits them, but even then, they'll go back to religion or culture again when it suits them. So it's a case of they're literally using every single person they can think of as Jewish. Some great examples of that are fairly easy to come by on the lists. For example, Alfred von Bayer, who was the first ever Jewish winner for chemistry. Oh, sorry, Jewish Nobel winner at all, sorry. He won chemistry in 1905. Now, you might say, what's wrong with von Bayer? First of all, it's not a very Jewish name, but his mother was Jewish, but his mother was from the Hitzig dynasty. It's a very famous Jewish dynasty, Jewish families, and she came from a sub-family of converts to Protestantism. Now, the question is, okay, she was a Jewish convert to Christianity, but we don't know, but what I've been unable to discover is when her mother and father or ancestors converted. Because if her parents converted to Judaism, converted to Christianity, then, okay, there's a case. If it was her grandparents who converted, then we have all sorts of problems in terms of halakhic religious law, because she wouldn't count as Jewish, according to them, unless she had a very fortunate or very specific descent. But the interesting thing about von Bayer is that he didn't confess Christianity, he didn't confess Judaism in his time, he wasn't culturally Jewish. The only way you can define him as Jewish is biologically, because his mother was allegedly a full Jewess. Now, I don't know whether she was completely that way or not. I'm going to find out. But my guess is she probably was. So by halakhic definition, he would count as Jewishness. So you can potentially argue religion there. But that goes completely out the window when we discuss someone like Otto Wallach, who won the chemistry Nobel in 1910. His father was from a family of Jewish converts, not his mother. And his father wasn't from a Kohenim or Levite family, while his mother was a German Gentile of no Jewish ancestry we know of. Now, that means that he cannot be Jewish halakhically, he cannot be Jewish culturally, he didn't confess Jewishness in his lifetime, he didn't even consider himself as Jewish. And this would mean that he's not religiously Jewish, he's not culturally Jewish, and the only way you can define him as Jewish is because his grandparents on one side were. Now, that's very, very different. Now, that isn't the definition that JINFO or Jewish Virtual Library use at all. That's completely different. It's completely opposite. In fact, it goes against every principle of halakha there is to include him. But they do, and every single list you'll find includes Otto Wallach. Another one poses a slightly different challenge. He's related to Einstein, actually, in terms of being one of the people who created the experiment that created Einstein's theory of relativity, was Albert Abraham Michelson, who won physics in 1907. His father and mother were both born Jewish, so halakhically he would be Jewish, but they both constantly rejected Judaism when they were at an early age, and they both went out with what they were both political radicals who eschewed any trappings of Jewishness at all. And so you can see in that they removed their Jewishness from themselves. They didn't identify as Jewish, and they were politically radical. I mean, just, you can't include them.
Interesting. All righty, we're going to a break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Wouldn't you agree? Healthy people are happier and more productive. Obesity is the root cause of many health problems. Do you want to lose weight safely, look sexy and attractive without side effects and no chemicals? Lose weight without the side effects safely with Zeno's Organic Dietary Supplements. Made in the USA, 100% USDA certified organic. Visit www.zenos.com. That's www.zenohs.com. Try our products risk-free for a limited time offer. No purchase necessary. You only pay shipping and handling. Get your old, sexy body back now. Visit Zenos.com. Get your free supplements now. Visit Zenos.com right now. www.zenohs.com. That's www.zenohs.com. There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
An effective, 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you, rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural, organic, and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent formula designed to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Order your 2-month supply by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Take the high road to a long and happy life. Heartandbody.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And of course, when people see all of these lists and they think, well, my goodness, these people have contributed so much to our society, yeah, to science, to medicine. How could they be wrong? How could they be, how could we associate them with bad things like usury and warfare and profit?
Well, I mean, it's amazing when you actually go into these lists and you say, well, how do we know that person's Jewish? How do we know that person is Jewish? How do we know that person's Jewish? How do we know what coherent definition are you using? And you immediately find that, in fact, that they're being, that the lists are almost, they're just awful. I mean, the greatest example I found was Christian Alfons Anfinsen, who won chemistry in 1972. He wasn't Jewish at all. He was an American of purely Norwegian origin who happened to convert to Judaism in the 1960s. So how on earth can we account him as being biologically Jewish? There's lists necessarily claim that these lists are lists of Jews who have contributed so massively, as if Jewish blood makes you a big contributor to humanity. So how on earth is he included? I don't know. Sometimes they pick up he's a convert, sometimes they don't. The classic, again, another classic list that I found that I was utterly astounded at was a list of Jewish Field Medal winners, which Field Medal, for those who don't know, is like the Nobel Prize of Mathematics. It's awarded to someone under 40 by the professional world body of mathematicians. And it's, according to the JInfo website, there were 15 winners. Now, I went through them again, as do I did with nobles, and I said, okay, well, how do we know this person is? I want to find evidence this person is actually Jewish. Went through them. 15, no. 10, yes. So, effectively, their number was out by a third. And that's pretty impressive, really, considering the fact that I actually looked in printed and online sources and couldn't find evidence for five of these people. And that cuts their numbers in a huge amount, and it sort of destroys their tendency to use these what I'd call standalone percentages. Of, you know, say 33% of all noble wins are Jews. The easiest way to deal with these kind of arguments is actually very simply to say, okay, we've got a number of Jews. Okay, if we have to compare them to another group, we can't compare them, as Jewish authors often do, to individual Western countries, because that isn't how they're comprising the Jewish group. The Jewish group is being comprised of the Jewish diaspora. So every Jew in any country is allowed to be Jewish. What I did was exactly the same thing, but I did it with Europeans and others. So, for example, in physics, the nobles, there were a total of 46 Jews won the Nobel Prize of Physics. Europeans, 133. Those of European origin have won 133 times. Out of a total Nobels awarded of 194. Percentage of Jews, 23.7%. Sounds huge. Then percentage of European origin, 68.6%. Then you go to chemistry. The amount of Jewish laureates is 33. European laureates, 116. Out of a total number of laureates of 163. That equals Jews have won 20.2% of them. Europeans, or those of European origin, I should say, 71.2. Medicine, Jewish laureates, 44. Total European laureates, 153. Total number of Nobel's awarded, 201. Your percentage of Jews, 21.9%. Percentage of Europeans, 76.1%. Literature, it's interesting that it's again, you've got 13 Jewish laureates, 83 European laureates. And you've got 109 Nobels awarded. Jews are only 11.9%, and Europeans are 76.1%. Peace, possibly the most controversial of all the prizes, as I'm sure you well know, in fact is the least Jewish of all the prizes. There's only 9 Jewish laureates, and I've excluded any organizations here because it's very hard to tell often whether an organization is totally run by Jews or whether it's partially run by Jews or not run by Jews at all, because getting behind them is quite difficult at times. But if we count that, then there's 9 Jewish peace laureates, and there are total European laureates are 68 out of a total number of peace laureates of 101, and percentage of Jews is 8.9%, percentage of Europeans 67.3%. But the interesting one, Deanna, is when we come to economics. Now, this one is particularly a bit weird, because economics was only introduced as a Nobel Prize in 1969. So it's got relatively few wins. But Jews account for 29 laureates, Europeans account for 41. So they're out of 71 laureates in total. So that's 40.8% Jewish, 57.7% Europeans. Now, doesn't that confirm a few stereotypes? First of all, they're not nearly as good at the sciences, literature, and politics as they make out, because obviously they're not getting the Nobel Awards in it, as their logic goes. But as soon as we get to banking, money, usury, economics, then all of a sudden their percentage jumps up massively to 40.8. That suggests that, you know, the people who broke the economies, guess who?
Indeed, the people behind the central banks, the people behind all the trade agreements. Mm-hmm. And of course, what you said points out that, who's going to put together a list of all the Europeans showing how wonderful the Europeans are? That's just not done, correct?
It's not done, but if you do it, it indicates clearly that the Jewish argument just falls apart. Because they are at a factor of three, often more, less well represented than Europeans. And even if you go to the Fields Medal, for example, we got, again, 10 Jews, 35 Europeans. So the percentage of Jews is 19.2%, but the Europeans comprise 67.3%. The Kyoto Prize, which is like the Japanese version of the Nobel Prize, you got 22 Jewish winners, 50 European winners, and only 18 Asian winners, actually. So you've got 23.9% winners are Jewish, 54.3% winners are European origin, and you've got 19.6% of them are of Asian origin. And you get the Shock Prize, it's the same thing. You've got 10 Jewish winners, you've got 24 European winners, and 3 Asian winners. So you've got 26% Jewish, 63% European, and 8% Asian. And you go to the Turing Award, which is the Nobel Prize of Computing, pretty much. You've got 13 Jewish winners, 4 Israeli winners, 39 European winners, and that comprises 29.3% Jewish, 67.2% European, and 3.4% others. And that split, as you can see, just from me reeling off a couple of figures, it's usually in a factor of two to three times more Europeans than Jews. So why are those of European origin not told that they are inherently superior to the Jews? Because of the fact that they have that they've got more Nobel Prize winners. And that's kind of why I split the numbers back, and why I'm still working through all these different lists. It's because once you show how many European, of those of European origin, Americans, Canadians, South Africans, Australians, and plus the old Europe as well, you begin to see that the Europeans have massively outmatched the Jews in terms of Nobel Prizes and all the academic prizes. The only prize I know of where the Europeans don't outmatch the Jews is the Israeli version of the Nobel Prize, called the Wolf Prize, where the Jews and the Gentiles are about equal. So the idea that the Jews are somehow superior because of these lists is complete gosh, because they're not. And the lists, if you compare them to actually what they're actually looking at, it shows that the Europeans have won far, far more. And bear in mind that when the Jews say, oh, we're a minority, so are Europeans. Those of European origin are a global minority, and they've stayed a global minority for quite some time now. If you bear in mind that these lists, they don't actually evidence what the Jews claim. They don't evidence that such and such a person, such and such a people, are superior because they've invented all things, because they are only an opinion. The Nobel Prize system, which is kind of copied by a lot of other prizes, such as the Kyoto, the Wolf, and so forth, is basically official nominators tell someone that, we'll send in a nomination, say why, what have you. Then this goes to a committee. One committee. That committee breaks down the list and says, okay, well, these people we think are worthy. Then that list gets forwarded up to another committee, who then makes a couple of, you know, the final pick of candidates, which in turn then gets kicked up to the final committee, they're often called the executive committees, and they then make that final call as to who gets what. It's very, very difficult to say that that is anything other than a subjective process, because it's very, very easy if you get a strong partisan on one or two of those committees to get to win a Nobel Prize, to win a Shock Prize, to win a Turing Award, and what have you. It's very, very easy to do it, because, for example, if I'm a Chinese scientist, I'm not going to be known in the West. My work is going to be largely in Mandarin. I don't have that ability to talk, to tell the West, look at this genetic mutation I've discovered. It's amazing. It will solve world hunger or something. I cannot do that unless I happen to speak a European language and publish in a European journal. If you look at the winners of these prizes, you can see that there is a political element in them, because if, for example, in the Kyoto Prize, strangely enough, no Chinese scientist, scholar has won one. Now, Why is that? The Japanese hate the Chinese.
Exactly.
So they're not going to ward the Chinese, regardless of the fact that they're right next to them and they have they're very conversant in Chinese society and
right.
history and science. They're not going to award one to a Chinese person because to do so would be to invite political and social censure because these two countries have a history of hating each other quite substantially. And in fact, if you go to either country, you'll often find that whenever there's a flare up between the two of them, one side is spouting hatred at the other one, and the other side is spouting the same hatred right back. It's really quite strange, having been out there, and it's happening. it isn't an objective prize. It's just the only way to come up with an objective figure for who was the most creative of all peoples would be to look at everything that's ever been invented. And sort of give it an impact, what I'd call an impact score, to say how much impact it had on the greater world of science, humanity, and what have you, and then go through the entire of history, work out who invented what, when, and then say, okay, and then assign it a number, and then just tot up the numbers by religion, nationality, biological origin, so forth. It's quite involved to do it. It's not an easy thing to do by any means. And I don't think a lot of people really realise that these lists are just a bunch of opinions, basically. It's the only way I could really put it.
Right.
Sorry.
Right. Yes. And as you say, they're certainly not scientifically devised, and they probably do it, in a month or so, or less. I mean, who knows how long they take to do this? And certainly, if they can put Obama on their list as someone who has advocated peace, I mean, that's definitely political.
do you know who he's sharing that list with?
Who?
Menachem Begin. he's a Nobel Peace Prize laureate.
He's a terrorist. He was a terrorist.
Yeah. So was I can't remember his name now, Palestinian leader. Arafat,
yeah.
Then there was, I think, Sadat's on there as well, and like the peace prize list is just hilarious.
It's indeed.
Like, you just go down the list and go, that man's a terrorist. Nelson Mandela's on there, and the man who invented the new form of torture.
So this is really just a programming device to get people to believe a certain thing about a certain group of people.
Yep. It's a very, very old one, as I said. It's got an awful lot of history behind it. And sort of another element to the argument that, again, is you don't often see questioned is when they say the Jewish minority. And I said, okay, Jewish minority, let's have a look at that. And I went back and had a look at the Jewish population figures. And then I said, okay, let's have a look at the population figures against countries in terms of their growth over the last 112 years. Because what Jews will often do is say, oh, there's 200 million Muslims in the world, or what have you. But as I said, there weren't 200 million Muslims in the world in 1901 when the Nobel Prize started. So why are you comparing the 2012 statistics against 112 years worth of history? You have to factor in population growth. And once you do that, you find out that the countries that have contributed the most Nobel Prize winners are very, very, very simply Sweden, Denmark, the United Kingdom, the United States, and Switzerland. Nothing to do with Israel. The only reason Israel is even on the list of high contributors is because they've had such a massive increase in population, but we can discount this because the Jewish population writ large has not increased. What's happened is that you've had a shift of population as opposed to an increase. And once you understand that, you can immediately see that the Jews haven't actually contributed substantially because they, as a people, they have stayed still. And they'll often you hear the first response to that, I've encountered is, oh, but the Holocaust. Well, okay, let's assume the Holocaust is real for a moment. But didn't Russia take 20 million to 30 million casualties out of a population of something of what we now know to be about 80 million? I mean, that's a hell of a lot more than 6 million out of 20, sorry, in terms of the ability to contribute. It's absolutely incredible when you look at, when you go into these figures and actually question them, the fact that they just fall apart before your eyes because they haven't checked the definition. They're not applying a consistent definition. They're just saying anybody who we can possibly name as Jewish, and even people I have no idea how they claim that they're Jewish, got to be somehow a Jew. Another sort of classic one would be,
Carl, we do have a break. We'll pick this up on the other side. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dry guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes 6 number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the five-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay, all the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley, an area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species, all gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts, rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pickup at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. TerraVim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from TerraVim? Simple. TerraVim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to TerraVim.com. That's TerraVim.com. TerraVim, the best supplements on earth.
All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Rattle, the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.com/blogspot.com. All righty, I was just reading some of the comments in the chat room, and so I don't remember what you were saying right before we. You know, I can just only think so many things, you know, in the same time period. So give me a clue. What were you talking about?
We were talking about the some of the list. Though, sorry, we're talking about the these lists and what have you. You mentioned earlier that you get these lists coming through into your inbox about Muslim versus Jewish prize winners. Now, I also did, I did some work on this because I happened to come across this argument when I was in the middle of checking it. It's quite early on when I checked it. I found that these arguments, these lists kept coming, these various lists. And again, like the Jewish, like any other Jewish list, these are completely off the wall when it comes to, comes to what actually, is the situation. Good example is, I'm sure you've all heard of, the Jewish Internet Defense Force, our lovely friends from the sort of land of lunacy. They have a list up on their, written on their pleasant website that I can't really stand. But, it lists, for example, a Muslim laureate, a Muslim Sheikh Arab laureate that says, 1988 for literature, Najib Mahfouz, peace, 1978, Mohammed Anwar El Sadat, 1994, Yasser Arafat, of course, 2003, Shirin Ebadi, 2005, Mohammed Al Baradi, and 2006, Mohammed Younas, plus physics for Ahmed Zuhail, and we have medicine, Peter Brian Medwar in 1960, and Felid Mulad in 1998. The problem with these lists is twofold. First of all, they got Ahmed Zewal completely wrong. He didn't win a Nobel Prize for Physics. He won it for chemistry. So I don't know quite how they got that one. The next one is that all of a sudden they started... they were thinking, the physics prize, they were thinking of Abdas Salam, who they completely missed out, who won a prize for physics in 1979, and is usually credited as being the only ever Muslim winner, a devout Muslim winner of a Nobel Prize, although that's not strictly true, because some of the more recent Peace Prize winners have, in fact, won. Now, additionally, Peter Brian Medwar, and Medwar wasn't Jewish, so I'm sorry, he wasn't Muslim, he wasn't Arab, so I don't even get particularly what the what was going on there, because his mother was a Lebanese Catholic. Okay, you could call him out for that. But his mother was a British woman from Brazil. And there's nothing that indicates he was actually Islamic at all. Felid Mulad is supposedly a Muslim, but I can't find anything that actually suggests he's actually a Muslim himself. In fact, from what he says in his Nobel biography, he says... This was also applied to our religious choices. As my father was a Muslim, okay, my mother was a Baptist, we were raised in a Catholic community, subsequently my brothers became Catholic when they married Catholic wives and I was baptized Episcopalian. Don't ask me how they get me as Muslim.
How true. Alrighty, we'll be back after station ID and a word from our sponsors.